This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 14th of March 2025. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 13th of March 2025. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: Councils want more time for merger plans, Village lost if shop shuts, and Dean promises radical candour. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
Councils across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight want to be given more time to formulate their final proposal for merging local authorities. The area's civic leaders believe it could become the most expensive local government reorganisation, LGR, programme delivered to date. The local authorities that currently make up the region are in unanimous agreement that the Isle of Wight should remain a separate and distinct unitary. However, no consensus has been reached on specific options for the mainland, including how many new authorities there should be. The proposed interim plan for Hampshire and the Solent, LGR, has been produced following last month's request from the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government, MHCLG, Minister of State for Local Government and English Devolution, Jim McMahon, set councils a deadline of Friday, March the 21st, to make submissions. The government wants to replace the current mix of two-tier systems and unitary councils across the country with larger unitaries that will deliver all of an area's services. Local authorities in the region are due to hold special meetings over the next fortnight to discuss their interim plan proposals. The document is set to be co-signed by the leaders of the three existing unitary councils and the 11 district and borough councils and the county council, which combined provide services to more than 2 million residents. Officials at the MHCLG will provide feedback to help support the development of final plans, which would be considered by the minister. The region's current deadline for the submission of a full proposal is Friday, September the 26th. Council leaders are asking for an extension of at least 2 months. The proposed interim plan says, "It remains challenging to deliver appropriate local engagement and decision-making in this period alongside devolution. We therefore request an extension for the full proposal to November the 28th, 2025. Attempting to meet the September deadline posed a risk to the engagement and analysis needed for an effective LGR proposal," the document added. In making the argument for Isle of Wight Council to remain unchanged post-LGR as an exceptional case, the proposed plan said, "Fundamentally, the cost of providing council services on an island physically separated by water are driven by dislocation and the associated small markets which result in inherently higher costs due to market barriers and the lack of economies of scale. These characteristics cannot be remedied by a council structure or scale."
Village lost if shop shuts. I think people are devastated by it. Those are the words of one woman on the impending closure of the Cheriton Village shop. On a post in Facebook, Cheriton Parish Council said that the shop and post office in School Road will close on March the 31st after being run for 16 years by Gillian Gray Knight. A public meeting will be held on Thursday, March the 13th in the Village Hall at 7 p.m. to discuss possible ways to save it. Actually, we've had March the 13th already. When was that?
Yesterday.
Oh, so there was a meeting yesterday. The post said, for the past 16 years, Gillian Gray Knight has worked very hard running the shop, making it a lifeline for many in our community. We extend our heartfelt thanks to Gillian and her team for their unwavering commitment and invaluable contributions to the village. With the shop's closure set for March the 31st, the future of this vital community asset is at stake. There is an urgent need to find someone, or a group, willing to take over and increase its impact in the village. Cheriton residents have expressed their sadness that the shop is closing. Vandra Roberts said, "I think people are devastated by it. The newspapers would go, the prescriptions would go, the post office would go. If people do not have it, it will be devastating." Janet Crowhurst said, "The village would be lost without it. We would have to drive to Alsford. All sorts of goods get delivered here. It's a lifeline of the village." Rosemary Barrett said the thought of the shop closing is awful. "We will miss it terribly," she said. "I use it a lot and I will have to get in the car to do any shopping. We just have to walk across there and it's a sort of community centre." David Wright said, I do not do much shopping there, but one of the main things I get there is my prescription every month, and they deliver it here." Pat Lawrence said, "We are not very happy about it. It's a shame to see it close. We've had a shop in the village since in my living lifetime, and it would be a shame to see it close. It would be a terrible thing for the village. The effect it's going to have on the amount of vehicle trips you're going to have between Cheriton, Brandine, Oslebury, the surrounding villages, because they all use the shop." Mrs. Gray Knight declined to comment.
Dean promises radical candour. The interim Dean of Winchester Cathedral has promised radical candour following a review into management and bullying in the chapter. Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream said that the cathedral will publish updates every 3 months to demonstrate its commitment to implementing the recommendations of the review. The review by the Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mountstephen, was sparked by controversy over the management style of members of the cathedral chapter over its choral music. Canon Ream said, "May I thank all those who have wished me well in my role as interim Dean of Winchester and for the public expressions of confidence I have had from Bishop Philip, Dean Catherine and my former colleague Mark Byford. These endorsements are important as public ministry in the church must be authorised both legally and communally. Without the active consent of the communities in which we serve, we cannot expect a fruitful or effective ministry. Dean Catherine has shown herself willing to work to the highest and most honourable standards of accountability in her response to the Bishop's review. We accept her stepping back with great regret and sadness, but with admiration for the integrity it demonstrates. She believes that stepping back will allow the cathedral she has served and loved the opportunity to move on. In doing this, Dean Catherine has acted with the best interests of her community at heart. I would like to apologise for my part in the dysfunction of chapter, which has led to the mistakes and failures outlined in the review summary. I am aware that many are asking, have we reached the end of the matter? The answer is not yet. The review comes to clear conclusions about what has gone wrong, where bad behaviours have occurred, and what needs to happen if we are to reach the settled future that Bishop Philip hopes for us. The Bishop's Review encourages Chapter to transparency and radical candour, so we have agreed to publish reviews of our progress every 3 months, citing the recommendations we are addressing, but starting immediately with the issue of team dysfunction. The Bishop of Winchester did not require this public scrutiny, but we want to be held accountable for the progress we are making. As reported, Canon Ream took over as interim Dean of Winchester Cathedral following the resignation of former Dean Catherine Ogle on March the 3rd, after the Bishop's Review criticised her for leading the cathedral into a period of crisis.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bristow, Robert Edwin Bristow, on the 15th of February at Maryfield Convent Residential Home, Hook, aged 88. Broughton, David Arthur Broughton, on the 8th of February, aged 83. Butler, Maureen Butler, on the 3rd of February, aged 80. Collins, Michael Robert Collins, known as Mike, at Winchester Hospice on the 28th of February, aged 60. Douglas, Claire Valerie Douglas, at Basingstoke Hospital. No dates are given. Fraser, Jim Fraser, on the 21st of February, aged 89. Godfrey, Alan Simon Godfrey, on the 23rd of February, aged 56. Jane, Henry Charles Jane, on the 15th of February, aged 87. Marshall, Richard Keith Marshall, on the 24th of February, aged 68. North, Trevor North, on the 23rd of February, aged 96. Patient, Marjorie Patient, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 6th of March, aged 91. Phillips, Kenneth Phillips, on the 24th of February, aged 89. Smith, Mary Rose Smith, at Winchester Hospice on the 27th of February, aged 90. Sturges, Mary Sturges, on the 23rd of February, aged 92. Wake, Mary Wake, on the 16th of February, aged 90. Wheeler, John Wheeler, at home on the 21st of February, aged 66. And now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment this week by Moira Redman is headed Stepping Forward in Love is the theme. Lent comes round again, and it's almost like New Year resolutions. We will curb our bad habits, give up chocolate, or aim to do something good for others, volunteer, help someone in need. The Lent theme this year at my church, St. Peter and the Winchester Martyrs, has the lovely title Stepping Forward in Love. We are looking at poverty, community solidarity, and above all, human dignity. The dignity of every person from the beginning of their life to its end, whatever their race, colour, creed, or abilities. It sounds straightforward and obvious. How else can you see other people? But sadly, a look around the world or attention to a news bulletin will give many instant examples of the opposite, people who do not believe that we are all equal and of equal importance. There are many people who put a very low value on others' lives, who treat whole swathes of society as inferior. We've been looking at a powerful message from Pope Francis, whom we're also especially praying for right now. We know how hard it is for our contemporary world to see poverty clearly for what it is. Yet, in my myriad ways, poverty challenges us daily in faces marked by suffering, marginalization, oppression, violence, torture and imprisonment, war, deprivation of freedom and dignity, ignorance and illiteracy, medical emergencies and shortage of work, trafficking and slavery, exile, extreme poverty and forced migration. Poverty has the face of women, men and children exploited by base interests, crushed by the machinations of power and money. The hard thing is not to be overwhelmed by the horrors around us. We can start to think that there's nothing we can do, or that anything we do is so tiny compared with the work remaining that it's not worth it. We need to conquer that idea within ourselves. Offering a small amount of help is always worth it, and we surely have all had the experience of offering a casual smile or a word to someone, and it's having a positive effect, almost out of proportion to the effort. It's humbling when that happens, but very real. After all, we've also all been on the other side of that, where an offer of help or a friendly remark has made a huge difference to us. In our church group, we're setting ourselves homework during Lent, a couple of things to think about each week. Consider how you greet others this week, remembering that each person is precious and created in the image and likeness of God. How can you make the extra effort to recognize someone's true value? Perhaps going out of your way to make a colleague feel included in a social invitation, or making a phone call to bring real human contact into someone's day. The Good Samaritan is a biblical story that is part of our common culture now, whether we are religious or not. Can we be like the man who helped a stranger? We'll be taking some small steps this Lent. And that was by Moira Redman.
Next we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got 10 letters this week on a variety of topics, and we'll start off with the first one.
Winchester car parks are a blight on our city, writes Rupert Pitt. The Chronicle had an interview with the owner of Gentian, which owns many properties in Winchester, in December 2024. In an interview with the Chronicle, Nick Eakins of Gentian Developments said the parking situation is crippling the city, with space now at a premium. Stop closing the car parks, please, now. Don't do it anymore. The falling number of car parking spaces has been dramatic. We, that's Gentian, are just in the process of buying an office with 30 car parking spaces. This is bad news. When have car parks ever added to the vivacity of a city? Seeing all the tarmac given over to car parks in River Park, Jury Street or Tower Street does not add to features that people might wish to see in a city. It is dead. Car owners are heavily subsidised. I carried out a survey of car parks with Chris Gillam 20 years ago, and after consulting with a surveyor, we estimated that if car parks were given over to private housing, rented housing, private and social council housing, they would bring in three times the income. The income from car park payments cannot compare to the income brought in from rents from tenants, either private or paying council renting. Car parks encourage traffic, which is destructive. No one in Winchester benefits from the violently busy traffic in North Walls, Eastgate Street, St George's Street and Jury Street, which have divided a city which has wonderful buildings to enjoy as you walk through, but which cannot be appreciated with a stream of cars going past you. Bill Bryson, in Neither Here Nor There, page 39, has commented astutely on the destructive effect of traffic. Quote, "I hate the way architects and city planners and everyone else seems to have lost sight of what cities are for. They are for people. But for over half a century, we have been building cities that are for almost anything else. For cars, for developers, for people with bold visions who refuse to see cities from ground level as places in which people must live and function. Why should I have to walk through a damp tunnel and negotiate two sets of stairs to get across a busy street? Why should cars be given priority over me?" A prime example of how Winchester has been taken over by traffic is coming into Winchester from the railway station. You have to go to the bottom of Station Road, where Stockbridge Road, Andover Road, City Road and Sussex Street meet. You then go down some stairs into a cheerless and graffitied tunnel and climb stairs to go to City Road to get to the other side of Sussex Street. It's a miserable entrance to a city. We should possibly introduce a congestion charge and request car users park out of town in the park and ride car parks, or that drivers use taxis. Many of the visitors to Winchester do not use cars. The Worthy Road car park, some Saturdays and Sundays, has 10 60-seater coaches there, bringing 600 people to the city. And many come in by train, and many local visitors come in by bus, which reduces traffic. The way forward is a congestion charge and regular bus and taxi use, which will make Winchester more civilised. That letter is from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
This letter from Simon Lever is entitled Ruinous Plans. The proposed plans for a new town around Mitcheldever Station would be damaging for the local and wider area, including infrastructure, causing dramatic damage to what is currently a rural area. 6,000 homes equates to potentially 12,000 residents and at the very least 4,000 vehicles. The infrastructure cannot possibly cope with such numbers, creating immense disruption and pollution, let alone damage to rare chalk-based rivers, facing yet more pollution. I understand that both Conservative and Lib Dems are united in their mission to stop such ludicrous plans to build 6,000 houses, 40% affordable, whatever that means these days. The City Council is politically united in stopping this plan. Should this plan proceed, it would undermine an already precarious democracy. We cannot possibly countenance such ruinous plans. And that letter was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close in Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Ian Tate, headed Worrying Deal. The corner house, substandard council housing, £750,000 wasted? On February the 4th this year, I addressed the City Council's Scrutiny Committee, raising concerns about its £500,000 purchase of the Corner House, Parchment Street, back in January 2020. This was after I'd spoken about the Corner House on a number of occasions at various council committees. The council bought the building unconditionally with the intention of converting it into council flats. This was contrary to the council's policy, which strives to retain community assets. The structural engineer's report, a public document, is damning about the state to the building and clearly indicates that the conversion will essentially be a complex rebuild and therefore very expensive. Although the council did secure planning permission, the proposed flats are awful. There's no outside space, and three of the flats are classed as substandard, as they're just too small. The council adopted a minimum space standard of 39 square metres, yet two flats are only 36 square metres, and a third is 37. How can the council get away with breaking its own rules? When Councillor Learney approved the purchase of the Corner House in 2020, there was a back of a fag packet business case which was fundamentally flawed. Even after 5 years, the council still hasn't prepared a proper business case, which will certainly show that the conversion is far too expensive and cannot be justified. Even worse, the building has been left to rot, with part of the sidewall collapsing onto a busy road and pavement. Everything about the purchase of the Corner House is worrying, and when the business case shows that the conversion is just too costly, what will happen to the building? With council funds being under extreme pressure, it's appalling that Winchester has wasted something in the region of £750,000 for what? And that's from Ian Tate, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Open event. This is a letter from Alicia Roman from Open Sight. I am pleased to announce OpenSight have partnered with third year events management students from the University of Winchester. We are running a charity walk and community event to raise awareness and vital funds to support OpenSight's work with vision impaired people across Hampshire. The event will take place on Saturday, March the 15th, beginning at Barton Meadows Nature Reserve. That's it at SO23 7ER, so it's beginning there, with a 40-minute accessible walk at 9:30 a.m. Participants are encouraged to arrive from 9 a.m. for a warm-up at 9:15 a.m. before setting off. Following the walk, attendees are invited to Winchester Rugby Club. There's another postcode here, SO23 7EF, from 10:45 a.m, where there will be a bake sale, hot drinks, face painting, and other family-friendly activities. Those who prefer not to take part in the walk are welcome to join at the rugby club. Open Sight has been supporting vision-impaired people across Hampshire for over 100 years, providing essential services, advice, and advocacy to promote independence and improve quality of life. Gemma McKnight, head of income generation and communications for Open Sight, said, "We are incredibly grateful to the students for choosing to support Open Sight through this event. Community-led initiatives like this to help us continue our work and bring people together in an inclusive and positive way. For more information, contact me via email at," and I'll have to read this twice, it is e.roman.22@unimail.winchester.com. e.roman.ac.uk. So that's e.roman.22@unimail.winchester.ac.uk. And that letter is from Alicia Roman of OpenSight, Winchester.
Or if you have the telephone number for OpenSight down in Bishopstoke, it might be easier just to ring them and get the information.
That's right.
War Heroes, this is a letter from Steve Jarvis. Having researched many Hampshire war deaths, I have the following for Percy Rumbold and any possible links with St. Maurice. The St. Maurice's War Memorial was mislaid after the church was demolished in the 1950s, and the one now present was only put up last year, with the names being researched as best as possible. Percy Rumbold, in 1911, was working in Southsea. His father died in 1913 and his mother in 1932. In the war pension records, her address in 1917 was 2 St. James's Villas, Winchester, and the same in the 1921 census. This address is not in the parish of St. Maurice, and one would expect the name to maybe be on St. Thomas's, St. Cross, or Christchurch church memorials, but it is not. He is listed on Peter Simmons School Memorial, but as Rumbold P.R. An explanation as to why he is not on the St. Maurice's Memorial is as above, but also some mothers could not accept their son's death and would not allow their name to be put on a memorial. My colleague on the above St. Maurice Memorial project, Geraldine Buchanan, has also got a reference that he was from a Roman Catholic family. St. Peter's Roman Catholic Church in Winchester was built after the Great War and has no formal memorial for it. I hope this helps. I have a website, www.hampshirewarmemorials.com, which has most of the memorials in Hampshire. Debt of Honour, Best and Beaumont James, 2018, based on the 1921 Winchester War Service Register, is a further source for Winchester's great war dead. And that letter's from Steve Jarvis, Nelson Road, Highcliffe in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Howard A. Ward, entitled Scrapped Poles. Re Hampshire County Council's pay for KPMG support with devolution. The devolution proposal for Hampshire and the Solent have raised concerns, many shared by Winchester Reform UK, and indeed Reform UK, not least about the cancellation of May's local elections. The formation of a new and inevitably complex structure will likely create more bureaucracy without delivering real strategic change. The process itself seems rushed, piecemeal, opaque, and lacks proper public consultation or democratic legitimacy. We have already been denied our right to vote on May the 1st, and with it our right to choose who represents us for the next term, and crucially, who will be instrumental in the formulation of the new authority and the systems within it. Now we hear of a wasteful spending with affected councils, including cash-strapped Hampshire, paying external consultants to carry out a piece of work for submission to the government by May the 21st, using models and data to help explore options for mergers. Are we to believe the councils in question cannot muster sufficiently qualified employees with local real-world knowledge to collaborate on this report in-house and avoid such wasteful spending? Winchester Reform UK, reformwinchester.org, supports streamlining local government, but policies and decisions should be made close to the people they impact and reflect their local needs. So, it does not bode well that a large remote bureaucracy will reconcile the competing needs of a heterogeneous area, empower local communities, cut wasteful spending, and ensure democratic accountability when last two of these have been disregarded and external consultants are needed for the first. If you have not yet, we urge you to exercise what democratic right we have left by responding to the government's belated public consultation before April the 13th, deadline at consultcommunities.gov.uk/LGGC/Hampshire and the Solent. I'll say all that again. consultcommunities.gov.uk/LGGC/Hampshire and the Solent devolution consultation. It is vital that we ensure, as best we can, that these proposals work for us. And that letter is from Howard A. Ward, Chair of Winchester Reform UK, at Compton Way, Oliver's Battery.
This letter from Vara Williams is entitled Austin Fashion. Re your item about the Jane Austen Regency costume experience in a recent edition, Chronicle, February the 27th. What do those women depicted think they are doing? I can only say that in Jane Austen's time, they would not have been described as ladies. Back then, it was considered fast to show an ankle, let alone knees. That's from Vara Williams, Hairstock Road, Winchester.
Excellent. This letter from Kate McIntosh of West End Terrace is entitled A Total Waste of Public Money. A few weeks ago, you published my letter bemoaning the loss of the huge beech tree on the northwest corner of Oram's Arbour, but the retention of its unsightly stump as a constant reminder of that loss. The latest proposal from Winchester City Council is to plant a lime sapling at the base of this stump, about 1 metre away from the remaining tree trunk, without prior removal of that stump or any grubbing up of the enormous spread of roots, which all gardeners know extend in diameter to that of the former tree canopy. These supposed experts on the natural environment must be following the advice that the Red Queen gave to Alice in Through the Looking Glass, when she said that with practice, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast. I always did it for half an hour a day. The advice of the Royal Horticultural Society on planting a tree sapling is to first dig a hole, making sure it's the same depth as the tree's root ball, but 3 times as wide. What our supposed expert is proposing would clearly be yet another total waste of public money through want of the most basic gardening knowledge. And that letter was from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, from the West End Terrace, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Canon Dr. Richard Lindley, and it stated Water State. It came as a shock to me to discover on Sunday, January the 26th, that there's no way to report a serious water leak or burst main to Southern Water. There was a burst main just east of the railway bridge in Park Road, Winchester, with water cascading along the road and over the bridge. This is an already a dreadful part of the road for driving over the one-lane bridge, and if the water had frozen overnight, there would have been additional risk. The burst originally occurred by or on Saturday the 25th. As no action had been taken by Sunday, I decided to contact Southern Water. Their website contains a general contact phone number of 0300 303 0368, but among the options there's no mention of water leaks, and there was no answer on any of the other options that I tried, even after holding on for a reasonable time. I then found another number, 0800 820 999. That is specifically labelled 24-hour free leak line. But this number does no more than offer the options on the general number, and again I could not get any answer on any of the options I tried. A chat line is available on the website, but the button would not work. In desperation and in view of the risk to traffic, I then telephoned the non-emergency 101 police number, and the responder said that he had no way to contact Southern Water but would pass a message to HCC. Work then began on Monday to rectify the problem and has been continuing. I submitted an outline complaint form to Southern Water on Sunday, and a lady phoned to discuss the matter and offer an apology. However, she did not even know of the existence of the 0800 leak line on the website. I warned her that unless the internet stroke phone access issue was quickly resolved, I would be making complaint to the regulatory body. When I asked how I could contact her if I needed to, she hesitated and then told me I could do so via the 300 number that she repeated for me. After a decent interval after the call, I tried the two numbers and the chat line again, with exactly the same experiences I had on Sunday. So I tried to phone her back to tell her, but there was absolutely no way through that number to reach a particular or any person. So I did then make a complaint to the Community Council for Water, where I was directed by the Ofwat website. I am appalled to know that this is the way that Southern Water behave, and that there is no way to report a burst main or indeed any leak. And that's from Canon Dr. Richard Lindy of Denham Close, Winchester. And there is a reply. A spokesman for Southern Water said, "We're sorry our customer had this experience. We investigated what went wrong and discovered a technical issue affecting one of our phone lines. This is being resolved now. We're always looking for ways to improve our customer service and the accessibility of information on our website and functionality. We are grateful for this feedback."
This last letter is entitled Loo of the Year, and it's from Becky Wall from the Loo of the Year Awards. "As the Managing Director of the Loo of the Year Awards, I am passionate about recognising and promoting excellence in public washrooms and loos. The Loo of the Year Awards 2025 entries are now open, and we are making it our mission to find the best away-from-home loos in the UK. We need your help to identify outstanding toilets in your community. For over more than 30 years, we have set the benchmark for excellence in public washrooms. We recognise and reward venues that provide safe, clean and accessible facilities for all, including families, disabled users and those with additional needs. We want to hear about the toilets that truly stand out, whether for exceptional hygiene, accessibility features or innovative design. Perhaps it's a shopping centre, service station, visitor attraction or local business that goes the extra mile to ensure a top quality experience. Or your employer might have spectacular toilets which really help with employee well-being, and the culture of the business. Our independent judges will assess nominated facilities on cleanliness, maintenance, accessibility, hygiene provisions, and overall user experience. Winning washrooms gain national recognition and help drive improvements in public facilities. Readers can submit nominations via www.loo.co.uk. That's www.loo.co.uk, or social media. Let's work together to celebrate the UK's best washrooms and raise standards for all. That's from Becky Wall, the Loo of the Year Awards.
And just to say, when we get on to the items of news interest later on, there are a couple of articles specifically about the state of the public conveniences here in yes. Winchester. So just hang in for that.
Something would do.
Next, we have the Chronicle comment, which will then be followed by First Person.
This week's editorial comment is entitled Village Shop Was a Vital Community Hub. Living in the countryside is the dream of many. Rural life has its attractions, but a lack of facilities is one of the major drawbacks. There are few villages in Hampshire that can cater for all spiritual and physical needs and still boast having a school, church, pub and shop. Cheriton near Alsford is one of them. Over the last 50 years, many rural shops have closed, crushed by the rise of supermarkets, near-universal car use and internet shopping. But the shop in Cheriton has thrived and been a vital community hub. Our report on page 3 highlights the impending closure on March the 31st and a public meeting due tonight, that was yesterday, Thursday, March the 13th, in the village hall convened by the parish council to discuss the options. There are positive signs. Other Hampshire villages, West Meon, Ropley and Preston Candover, to name but three, have faced similar issues, and local people have rallied round and set up new organisations that have taken over businesses and made a success of them. The signs are promising for Cheriton. This has been a well-run and well-supported operation. It was not a place with empty shelves. Cheriton is a village of several hundred people, and without sounding complacent, there are likely to be many, especially the retired, who would be willing to volunteer their time and expertise in taking over the shop or launching a new one. Let's hope so.
And this is by Yin and Ezra, MBE, entitled The Need for Leadership. Readers, hopefully, are aware that the current setup of boroughs and counties is going to change. With the first stage of this change, the election of a mayor coming up quite fast. Should we be concerned or even bothered? We could have a centralised setup with regions and divisions all governed by Whitehall. That would create uniformity, a neat, uniform and elegant organisation. But, given the turbulent local history of this diverse island, even the thought of such an organisation would cause another civil war. We have a long and generally honourable history of local government in England. This success is built on the shoulders of local volunteers who care passionately about their communities. This can sometimes become obsessive, but it provides an essential check and balance to the plans of the central government. But it's the quality of this civic leadership, enhanced by able council officers with the ability to think ahead, that is the key. We have been really fortunate in Hampshire, with very few exceptions, with the quality of the people who have led and continue to do so the various tiers of our local government. The proposed reorganisation, which can be very unsettling, will hopefully deal gently with all those involved. On a lovely spring day, my wife and I decided to go for a walk. Hillier's Arboretum was our destination, with lunch at the wonderful Bare and Ragged Staff. The site was bathed in lovely sunshine, so many people of all ages wandering through the many footpaths. Our destination was the Millennium Border. Some lovely flowers, but much still edging their way towards the light. There is a lovely space for the creation of wonderful outdoor music. Trees not in leaf, but full of promise. Birdsong and the lovely screams and laughter of numerous children. This site, so loved by the local community, would not have existed if it was not for the local government. The Hampshire County Council, at some stage, was gifted the whole site by Sir Harold Hillier. But instead of being sold off or developed, the County Council invested in its infrastructure, particularly a beautiful, award-winning visitor centre opened by Queen Elizabeth. The whole site attracts many thousands of visitors, but never feels crowded, as it's large enough to absorb everyone. The art, both on display in the gallery and often in the gardens themselves, has given local artists a beautiful venue to express themselves. It's no accident that we can all enjoy this wonderful place. All this is due to leadership. The various leaders of Hampshire County Council and the chief executives were determined to ensure this wonderful space would be available to everyone in perpetuity. But it had to be a centre of excellence, hence its association with the capital of UK horticulture, Kew, and that was reinforced by the excellence of its directors. Thanks to this foresight, the membership scheme and the events programme bring in enough income to make it not a drain on the public purse. So as you wander around, just give a thought to those people within the local authority for ensuring Hillier's is there for all of us to enjoy. Fortunately, there are many other examples of Council's findings, innovative and brave, means to ensure that that valuable local facilities do not disappear. As the years have gone by, this has become harder. The future will depend on local councillors and officers constantly looking for lateral answers to these thorny issues. This is true civic leadership.
Some What's On items. On Saturday the 29th of March, Southern Voices are giving a concert at Holy Trinity Church, North Walls at 7:30. On Friday the 4th of April, the Verdi Requiem will be performed in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30. From Saturday the 5th of April through to Saturday the 12th of April, at the Chesil Theatre, there's a production of Death and the Maiden, a psychological thriller. From Friday the 25th to Sunday the 27th of April, it will be the Winchester Books Festival at the Arc, and there'll be an item about the Books Festival later in this recording. And then from Friday the 2nd of May to Monday the 5th of May, quite a little way ahead, will be the Winchester Chamber Music Festival. Sunrise today was around 6:30 in the morning. I don't know if anybody was up to, whether none, I think, were up to see the eclipse of the moon. And sunset is around 6 p.m. in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you had a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Just before we start off with the items of general news interest, in the letters we mentioned, we read a letter from Open Sight about their walk, and I suggested that you might like, rather than contact them via the website, that you might like to just ring Open Sight. We've now actually found the telephone number for Open Sight down in Bishopstoke, which is 023 8064 1244. That's 023 8064 1244. That's Open Sight if you're interested in participating in that walk. Anyway, we now move on to items of general news interest.
Residents raise nearly £6,000 for charity. Residents and staff at two Winchester care homes have raised nearly £6,000 for a charity. Colton Cares, Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View chose the BOAZ project, that's B-O-A-Z, a Sutton Scotney farm-based therapeutic work community, as their joint charity for the past year. Their fundraising initiatives included a family-friendly afternoon fete at nearby St Peter's Primary School, featuring stalls selling crocheted gift items handmade by residents and team members. BOAZ staff and volunteers also sold fresh eggs from their chickens, cards, wooden crafts and jams. Abbots Barton resident Grace Gray, who joined Colton Care and BOAZ representatives for the presentation of a £5,906 cheque to round off the year of fundraising, said, "We're thrilled to have been able to support BOAZ, a local charity we were only too pleased to choose." BOAZ events and volunteer coordinator Catherine Phillips said, "We hope to use the money to help renovate our kitchen."
Resident blasts city's inadequate toilets. A member of the public has blasted Winchester City Council for the state of its public toilets, pointing out that the funds earmarked to improve the city's facilities have not all been spent. At a scrutiny committee on March the 5th, Julian Perkins said that while some improvements have been made to a specific city centre site, not nearly enough has been done to make it acceptable to residents and tourists. Mr. Perkins said, "I address this scrutiny meeting with regard to the totally inadequate facilities that still exist at the Market Lane public toilets." He cited a personally distressing visit to the toilets at Market Lane, just off the High Street, which has inspired him to speak repeatedly at council meetings over the past 2 years. "I understand the refurbishments are now complete at this facility, with the exception of a new door for the disabled entrance. On a recent visit myself, there have been some minor improvements, with a few components replaced, along with a greater attention to what was permanent flooring awash with water before." He then asked why, considering the numerous complaints put forward about the city's public toilets, the council has chosen to spend so little on the facilities in the city. Concluding his speech, Mr. Perkins said, "My plea tonight is to respectfully urge all councillors present to use their very best endeavours to press for funding sufficient to bring these Market Lane facilities up to a proper standard for public use." The refurbishments were approved for funding on September the 13th, 2023, to the tune of £780,000. Some 17 months later, only £112,000 has been spent, and it was known that the Market Lane unit would need an extension to the lease prior to my major expenditure. Our residents deserve better. Our visitors deserve better. Our city deserves much, much better. Replying to Mr. Perkins' queries, Committee Chair Caroline Brooks said, "Thank you for coming and speaking this evening. We'll certainly note that and pass forward your comments, and hopefully we'll have some thoughts back to you at our next meeting. We will certainly discuss as a group whether public toilets is something we'd like to pick up as a task. So thank you for your feedback. It's much appreciated." Then we have the next article, which is entitled Toilets Refurb. Workmen have started the refurbishment of Winchester's most prominent public toilets. The conveniences in Abbey Gardens on the Broadway will be closed for around 2 months. The move is part of a district-wide programme of upgrades and follows repeated criticism from the public about the state of the loos, most recently last week at a City Council scrutiny committee from local resident Julian Perkins. In a Facebook post, the council said, "The toilets will be closed from Monday, but we're hopeful there will be periods during the closure when we can maintain limited access to the facility, particularly the disabled toilet, when the project schedule allows. We're expecting works to take around 8 weeks, open in time for the busy summer period. Thank you for your patience while we improve these facilities. Your nearest public toilets, while the work takes place, will be Market Lane, opposite Marks and Spencer's. There are also public toilets by the Ark in Jury Street and at the Chesil multi-storey car park off Chesil Street. The City Council agreed last year to spend £760,000 on upgrading its public loos across the district."
This festival isn't just about big names, it's about discovery. And the festival is the Winchester Book Festival. The Ark Cafe hosted some familiar faces on Wednesday evening for the launch of the annual Winchester Books Festival. Sophie Lyodet and Sian Searles, co-founders of the festival, organised the launch to thank sponsors and supporters for enabling their event to run for a third year. On arrival, attendees were greeted by friendly faces and complimentary drinks supplied by the sponsors Bombay Sapphire and Mighty Brew. Other guests included MP Danny Chambers, Rathbones, Savills, and a variety of authors and illustrators who will be making an appearance in April. An emerging children's author, Andy Hussey, said, "It's really exciting to have that launch date because it's a lot of work and planning. But when you suddenly get to the launch evening, the excitement really kicks in." To the right of Andy was Sarah Davis from the Winchester BID. She said, "The launch of the Books Festival is an exciting event. It brings together people who are getting a feel for what it means to be a world-class destination for new authors as well as those already established." In a speech, Sophie Lyodet described the first year of the festival as a white-knuckle ride, but added, "This year we've truly found our stride. We're building what Sian and I envisaged, a well-rounded book festival. This festival isn't just about big names, it's about discovery. One of our core aims has always been to give a platform to local writers and fresh talent. At a time with great division in the world, in a small way, we hope to bring people together through the power of words, in wonderful venues, right here in a city with such a deep literary history." After hearing from Sophie and Sian, MP Danny Chambers shared a few words regarding the importance of reading, especially for the younger generation, highlighting the importance of the children's authors and events that will be run at the festival. He said, "It's worth remembering that one of the biggest indicators of whether a child will do well at school is if they've had books in the house and whether their parents read to them. Winchester Book Festival, taking place from April the 25th to April the 27th, will welcome big names like TV reporter Jeremy Bowen, Olympic and gold medalist Kelly Holmes, and tennis coach star Judy Murray."
Lecturer wins award for hard-hitting story. A university lecturer has won an award for a hard-hitting piece about the shortcomings of the British legal system. Brian Thornton, a journalism lecturer at the University of Winchester, is the 2025 winner of the Conversation Prize for his article Convicting the Innocent. The piece focuses on the systemic barriers facing people wrongly convicted of a crime, including the cases of Sean Hodgson and Sam Hallam. The Conversation is an independent source of news analysis and informed comment written by academic experts. This year's competition, in partnership with Faber and Curtis Brown, required academics to submit a 2,000-word article and book pitch. The judges said, "The research on the current failings of the legal system would be of great interest to the general public, especially following the fallout from the post office scandal. The essay is well written and punchy, if shocking and unnerving." Brian, a senior lecturer and programme leader for the BA Honours Journalism course at the University of Winchester, said, "I'm delighted and honoured to have won the Conversation Prize for Writers. My article focused on miscarriages of justice and how the system fails innocent people. It's an important topic, but one that is so often ignored by media organisations because of the complexity of the cases and the opacity of the legal system." He added, "I'm very grateful to everyone at the Conversation for this opportunity to highlight this important issue. Hopefully it may get people talking and thinking about how to solve it." Brian has won £1,000 and mentorship from both Faber and Curtis Brown.
Date for Range. The Range, which is a home, leisure and garden store, has shared more information on when it plans to open in Winchester's home base unit. In December, it was confirmed that Home Base on Eastern Lane, Winnell, would be closing its doors for good after going into administration. Consequently, the DIY seller saw the majority of its stores bought by CDS, which owns the Range, including the Winchester branch. No information has been given so far about a transition date, as Homebase continues to slash its prices ahead of closure. But the Range has indicated on its Facebook page that it will officially open in Winchester in April.
A vital opportunity to bring new life to the city. A planning application for a once-in-a-lifetime city centre regeneration project could be submitted by the end of next year. The Silver Hill development in Winchester has been subject to multiple iterations and false starts over more than a decade. City Council cabinet members are set to approve the first milestone of the current project since the signing of a development agreement last April with partner Jigsaw Consortium. Jigsaw has produced a development delivery plan setting out what, when, who and how for the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, which includes the bus station, King's Walk block and Friars Gate car park. Speaking before the Scrutiny Committee on Wednesday, March the 5th, Council leader, Councillor Martin Todd, said it was an absolutely vital opportunity to bring new life to the heart of the city. He said the development will deliver new homes, jobs, businesses and bring millions of pounds of investment into Winchester. "This is not going to be a false start," Councillor Todd said. "At the moment, the difficult financial situation nationally means that many regeneration schemes are falling by the wayside. But we are not going to fall by the wayside. That's the decision we're taking today. While we can all get frustrated about how long it takes to make this kind of project happen, we've had way too many false starts in the past, and there's no prize for going faster if the price is failure. Excuse me. Two previous schemes for Silver Hill hit the buffers due to economic factors and legal action, respectively. Jigsaw's 194-page development delivery plan sets out that a master plan could be completed before the end of the year, ahead of a planning application submission in late 2026 or early 2027. The indicative programme timeline suggests, subject to planning approval, a phased construction process will be completed by 2034. Jigsaw said the project was once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to create a magical new place that unlocks this part of Winchester and brings new life to this timeless city. When Cabinet meets on Thursday, March the 13th, councillors will also be asked to approve infrastructure, public realm and phase delivery plans, the initial financial model and ring fencing, 4.5 million of community infrastructure levy receipts for infrastructure work. A public forum on the process with the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme is set to take place on April the 2nd.
Activists take to the street in foie gras battle. Activists have staged a protest outside a Winchester wine lounge in an attempt to force it to take foie gras off its menu. Margot Lounge on Jury Street had already come under fire from PETA, that's P-E-T-A, that's an organisation that stands for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, for serving the luxury food item whose production involves the force feeding of geese or ducks and harvesting their swollen livers. However, campaigner Molly Elsdon took the fight up a notch by staging a dinner on the pavement outside Margot, where a duck defender, fellow campaigner Jasmine Harwood, was sitting at a table and force-fed via a siphon and tube by a waiter, Alex Harmon, who campaigns with Plant-Based Treaty. A spokesman for the lounge said, "At Margot, we respect the right to peaceful protest, but we will not be pressured into compromising our values or the choices of our guests. We have previously engaged in discussions with PETA, yet despite our willingness to communicate, they have chosen to protest outside our establishment. We stand firmly by the principle of mutual freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of choice, and freedom to enjoy quality, responsibly sourced food without intimidation. We will continue to serve our guests with the same dedication to excellence, integrity and hospitality that defines Margot Lounge." The past weeks have seen Margot Lounge heavily criticised for the inclusion of foie gras, the production of which is illegal in the UK, on its menu. PETA Senior Campaigns Manager Kate Werner said, I suppose that's Werner strictly speaking, said, "Dishing up the diseased livers of force-fed birds is appalling and unjustifiable. PETA is calling on Margot Lounge to ban this delicacy of despair and for the UK government to make good on its promise to end imports. Diners should speak up for ducks whenever they see foie gras on offer." Molly Elsdon echoed these thoughts. "Foie gras is diseased liver of geese and ducks who are force-fed by having a metal pipe run down their throats to consume large amounts of grain and fat," she explained. "It's the equivalent of a human being eating around 20 kilograms of pasta in a day. And of course, this leads them to suffer from broken beaks and broken bones, and they struggle to breathe because their livers swell up so much. This is a process that's so cruel that it's actually illegal to produce in the UK. So yes, we want to encourage Margot Lounge to ban foie gras in favour of vegan alternatives.
Another crash prompts calls to take action. Another crash at a notorious traffic black spot has sparked calls for the council to take action. Two vehicles crashed at the Cart and Horses Junction on the A33 at Kingsworthy, where it intersects the B3047, at 6 p.m. on March the 6th. A police spokesman said, "This was a non-injury collision involving two cars. The road was closed for a short period of time to allow for recovery of one of the damaged vehicles." Local resident Chris Bishop saw the incident and has called for more action to be taken. Chris said, "I couldn't turn off into Kingsworthy as police had cordoned off the entry into Winchester. The road needs laying out again. It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like that in all my life. They need to put traffic lights on it or something. It's dangerous." The junction, which is jointly managed by Hampshire County Council and National Highways, has been the cause of multiple crashes over the past few years.
Volunteer clean-up. Winchester residents are invited to take part in a volunteering day to clean up an estate. The Winnell Forum is calling on locals to take part in the Big Winnell Clean-Up and help launch a Love Winnell campaign. The event will be held Saturday, March the 29th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Winnell Manor Park. The event is aimed at fostering community spirit and improving the local environment. All necessary equipment for the litter pick will be provided.
Plans for battery facility backed to get green light. Plans to build a new battery energy storage system near Hursley have been recommended for approval, despite opposition. Winchester Energy Reserve Limited has applied for the system at Silkstead Farm, Poles Lane. The application covers the construction of the battery storage facility, as well as associated infrastructure, access provision, and ecological enhancement. The application to the City Council is only for temporary planning permission, lasting for 30 years. Winchester City Council's Planning Committee will discuss the plans on Wednesday, 12th of March. So that was 2 days ago. Council officers have recommended that the plans be approved, with a report saying, "The development is recommended for permission as the proposal results in the introduction of an important renewable energy development and it complies with the development plan and no adverse harm is raised from other matters, including protection of heritage assets, residential amenity, highways, assessment of glint and glare, biodiversity and drainage considerations, amongst others. However, the application is being sent to the committee due to the number of objections raised, with 22 letters opposing the plans from the public. Reasons for objecting include the location not being acceptable, loss of agricultural land, and the application being contrary to policy. Otterbourne Parish Council has objected, saying, "Although the location proposed lies outside our parish boundary, the proposed development would result in a significant increase in traffic movements on Poles Lane during the 6-month construction phase, impacting residents living next to the road and raising road safety concerns at the point where the road enters the village. HGV traffic volumes are already high, with large high-sided vehicles moving to and from the nearby waste management site, and speeds of vehicles often exceeding 30 miles an hour as they enter the village on this road. Melvin Young of Upper Silkstead said, "The project should be allocated to a brownfield site. It's totally inappropriate for this farmland. We already have the Four Dells site, which creates noise pollution, sometimes starting before 7 a.m. And if this new site were to go ahead, we'd be sandwiched between the two."
Rangers recover £100,000 in stolen goods. A group of rangers in Winchester has recovered £100,000 worth of stolen goods. The Winchester Business Crime Reduction Partnership, WBCRP, and Winchester BID Rangers have been working together since 2018 to keep the city safe. The Business Investment District Rangers have successfully recovered more than £100,000 worth of stolen goods, returning them to businesses in the city centre. The Rangers are security professionals accredited under the Community Safety Accreditation Scheme, CSAS, and certified by the Security Industry Authority, SIA. The Rangers work closely with local businesses, Hampshire Constabulary, Winchester City Council and Winchester BID, forming a robust network to combat theft and antisocial behaviour. Key functions include assisting businesses in tackling theft, recovering stolen goods and supporting the Shopwatch and Pubwatch schemes to stop offenders targeting the city centre. And there's a very attractive picture in the city centre on the High Street with the officers and some members of the BID with some balloons spelling out 100K, indicating the returned stolen goods. So well done to them.
Experts, search dogs, put to work in forensic lecture. Forensic students at the University of Winchester were visited by two expert search dogs. Labradors, Hoodie and Red, from Hampshire Fire and Rescue, demonstrated their skills to students on the forensic archaeology module. The dogs, accompanied by handlers, showcased their ability to detect ignitable liquids at crime scenes, outperforming electronic equipment. The students watched as Hoodie and Red sniffed out accelerants planted in the lecture room. Selena Robinson, senior lecturer in forensic investigation, said, "The event strengthens our continued partnership with local emergency services while providing students with valuable hands-on learning experiences." The visit provided a practical insight into the role of search dogs in fire investigations, enhancing the students' understanding of forensic archaeology. The event was part of the university's ongoing collaboration with local emergency services.
Cathedral sees the light. Hundreds of people attended the opening night of a stunning light and sound show at Winchester Cathedral this week. The cathedral opened its doors for the first of five nights of the show, giving people an immersive experience through the rich tapestry of literature, poetry, and oral traditions. The show, called The Storytellers, invites people to explore a series of captivating light and sound installations, bathing every inch of the cathedral interior in light and sound. The Storytellers is the fifth light show at the cathedral, created by Lux Muralis, known for their large-scale art installations. Previous shows, such as Crown and Coronation and The Elements, attracted hundreds of visitors and proved popular. This year's show includes projections and original compositions inspired by renowned authors such as Shakespeare and Jane Austen. The cathedral's nave features 360-degree projections, transporting visitors into fantasy, romance, science fiction, and adventure realms.
Free Easter Trail for families to explore. Families are invited to take part in a free Easter-themed activity trail around Winchester city centre. The Bunny Hop Easter Trail, organised by Winchester Business Improvement District, will run from Saturday the 5th of April to Monday the 21st of April. The activity is free and aimed at children, families and groups looking to explore Winchester's historic city centre. People who want to take part can download a trail sheet online at the Winchester BID website or pick one up from the Visitor Information Centre, the ARC or Winchester City Museum. The city centre has been split into 9 areas, each with an Easter-themed word displayed in the windows of local businesses. Using the trail sheet map, families can explore the streets in search of the 9 hidden words. Participants can return their completed trail sheets to any of the hub locations to collect a small treat.
Families enjoy fantastic fun day. Family members, young and old, enjoyed a free family fun day at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. On Saturday, March the 8th, the Leisure Centre offered an array of free activities for all, managed by Everyone Active, in partnership with Winchester City Council. Running from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, the centre encouraged both keen gym-goers and families alike to come down and explore all the facility had to offer. 100-mile charity bike ride, raising money for Breast Cancer UK and the Ben Kinsella Trust, took place throughout the day, covering the length of the South Down Way. As well as this, a wide range of free group exercise classes were hosted, such as body pump, body conditioning and circuits, with gym challenges and personal trainer tester sessions also on offer. Children enjoyed free face painting and balloon modellers, alongside the chance to meet the iconic Everyone Active Monsters.
Majestic big cats arrive at Morwell Zoo.
I knew that was going to come.
And me.
2 big cats have been welcomed to Morwell Zoo. A beautiful female snow leopard, Zaya, and a magnificent male Amur tiger, Pasha, are settling into their new habitats within the 140-acre Hampshire Park. Zaya, a 1-year-old snow leopard, is less than a week into her stay at her new home, where she has met male snow leopard Wajam. She arrived from the big cat sanctuary, where she successfully underwent an eye operation a year ago. Pasha, a 5-year-old Amur tiger, has also arrived at Marwell from Point Lim Safari Park. He has settled in quickly and has been spotted interacting with Marwell's resident female Amur tiger, Valentina, through the fence between their habitats. Amur tigers are listed as endangered and snow leopards are vulnerable on the International Union of Conservation for Nature's Red List. Both cats are part of a breeding program and will play an essential role in their conservation breeding programs, ensuring healthy and thriving populations. Carrie Arnold, carnivore team leader, said, "We are delighted to welcome Zaya and Pasha to Marwell Zoo. Having not one but 2 big cats arrived in the same week has been a great experience for our team. They've both been settling in well, showing curiosity and confidence as they explore their new habitats. We can't wait for everyone to meet them and learn about the vital conservation projects we are doing to protect the species." Marwood is committed to big cat conservation both in the zoo and in the wild. As part of its wider initiatives, Marwood proudly collaborates with partners in China, Bhutan, Kazakhstan and across international borders to protect the future of snow leopards. That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.